My name's Greg. I'm an addict. And I'm a real person, too. And I'm the disease of addiction. And I'm recovery. And I'm Narcotics Anonymous, just like all of us are. I'm real glad to be here. I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. I rarely do. I'll probably talk about the way I feel. Because I look out and, you know, I see a gang of faces. And I see a lot of little lights on those faces. And some of them are real clouded. And some of them are real well hidden. And some of them shine brightly. And really all I have to say is take care of those little lights. Nurture them. And strengthen them. And let them shine. That's where the miracle is. Let them shine. When I talk, I like to start with another moment of silence. And if you will, please, for the addict who still suffers. Thank you, God. I'm not going to talk a lot about what got me here. I love it when people come in and say, you know, I can't use anymore. Sure you can. You know how to do that good. So do I. We are experts at the disease of addiction. We maintain that long into our recovery. At least I did. An expert at the disease of addiction. I know how to use. I know how to go out there and die. I know how to go out there and hate myself all the time. You know, I know how to sit backwards on a toilet and drip blood on the floor. I know how to do all those things. But that's not what we're here for, is it? You know, I'm not here for that. You know, it's kind of like when we're doing the steps and traditions and reading, I get a funny feeling when I hear people try to turn them into the midnight movies. I get an itch. And somehow that doesn't sit right with me. But I love you. And I know we identify on different levels. When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, there were perhaps one-tenth of you. You know, NA was like 200 people. And maybe 20 meetings in the world. Part of my great joy is watching NA grow. You want me to put this up? I can put it up. Anything else? I've been given the gift of seeing your lights light up and seeing life come back in your eyes. That's one of the most exciting things to me, to see the death go out of someone's eyes. Because I know it was in mine. I cherish you. I cherish you. I'll tell you a little bit, I guess, about how I got here. I started using when I was 6, 7, 8 years old by prescription. And I use for about 15 years. And I was never arrested, and I was never hospitalized, and I never got in a whole lot of trouble. But there's nothing worse in the world than hating yourself. You know, that's the price we all pay, I believe. Self-loathing, self-hate. And I don't have to be that way anymore. I don't have to hate myself today. You know, and that's a miracle. That's a miracle. I was 23 years old, and I was all used up. I'd done everything twice like any good addict, just to make sure. Or three times or four times, just in case it might work. And I was all used up. I was ready to die. I've been praying for death, or at least, God, please don't let me wake up for a while. A lot of things happened in the year or two before I got here that I think drove me to seek help. One of them was giving up a child for adoption. My girlfriend and I had a baby. And it was just about 18 years ago. And we talked because I really wanted that child. But I couldn't promise to be there to help raise that child. And I couldn't promise to be there in 6 months. Because the way I was living said I wouldn't be. Or the way I was dying said I wouldn't be. And my grandmother died. She was an addict too. She took too many Reds one night, slipped and fell and scalded to death in the shower. Death by addiction. It's listed a lot of ways, isn't it? It's listed by asphyxiation, you know, choking on your own puke. It's listed by burning, scalding to death in the shower. It's listed by traffic accident. It's listed so many ways, but never death by addiction. And maybe someday we'll start recognizing death by addiction. Because we know what it's like. I tried getting married. Oh, by the way, that woman who I had a baby with is, we got married shortly thereafter, and we're still married. We have two more children who've never seen me loaded. We have a life. A life beyond what either of us could dream about. On the day we got married, my best friend hung himself. He'd been sniffing too much glue and he couldn't think anymore, and he left a note saying, "I just can't think anymore." And I didn't go to his funeral. I mean, that's the sort of thing that got me here. Those last 2 years. What I remember most is the feeling, the hopelessness. Because I'd been looking for help. And one thing that I know is that in 1970 there was no place for an addict to go. There was no help. I was left down to about three choices. I was seriously considering suicide. I was seriously considering going out and hitting a cop so they would stop me. And I was calling the helplines. I came off the helpline, somebody else's helpline. I don't know, a suicide line or something like that. So those of you who work on the helplines, God bless you. That's how I got here. Those of you who take those phone calls, that's how I got here. I finally reached someone and said, "Are you eligible for Narcotics Anonymous?" I said, "I don't know. What do you have to be?" And said, "Well, we don't know either, but here's his phone number, so call it." I mean, you can get that today a lot of places, but a lot of places you'll get a real live addict. And that makes a difference. That counts. And I'm into making a difference. And I look out and there's some people that I love dearly here. Some people I've met briefly here and some people I don't know formally. But I know we share the same feelings. I know we share the same experience. I hope we share the same commitment. And I called that. And the first question the person asked me, do you have a car? There were not a lot of cars in Narcotics Anonymous. And I said yes, and they said, we have someone we'd like you to pick up. And no one came to get me. The guy just said, of course I wasn't real honest with him, mind you. You know, I told him, I might have a little problem. I'd like some help stopping using. I didn't come to Narcotics Anonymous because I had a desire to stop using. I doubt if very many of you did, to tell you the honest damn truth. I came here because the drugs didn't work anymore. And I figured if I cleaned up for a while, they'd work again. And I came here because of the pain. I had an honest desire to stop hurting all the time. I had an honest desire to stop hating myself and hating life all the time. You know, I would come from, life sucks, you know. Life doesn't suck. I suck periodically. My attitude sucks. My insanity kills me. Life's just fine. It doesn't give a shit one way or the other. It doesn't have the capacity to suck. I learned that here. Isn't that wild? You know, I thought I was being picked on by God and by society and by everybody else. And they don't give a shit about me. They don't care for me to hurt. My God cares about me. But reality isn't there for Greg. I'm not so special that I should be singled out for pain and misery. I'm just an empty-headed guy. You know, I don't want to hurt anymore. This sucks. It's amazing how easy it is when we first come around. Most of us find it easy to do what we're told when we first come around, when you've gotten a whole lot to lose. It isn't until a little while down the road where we've gotten a little healthy and, you know, accumulated some stuff and, you know, got some prestige, maybe have a job again, that we start worried about having something to do and it's difficult to surrender. It was much easier for me to surrender my first week than it was in 2 years. 2 years it kicked my ass. Much easier when I crawled in the door. So I remembered the pain a lot clearer. It's funny how we forget the pain. Anyway, this guy said, well, why don't you come to one of our meetings? And he said, well, you know, asked me if I had a car and the whole bit. He really didn't ask me that first. That was not true. But it was in that first conversation that he asked me whether or not I had a car and was willing to transport people. And I promised him that I would come to a meeting. This was a Tuesday night in the beginning of October of 1970. And there was a meeting that night, but it was too far to drive. I'd had my last fix the day before, and I was ill. Was not doing well. And it was about 50 miles to a meeting. And I wasn't going to make it. I said, no, I can't do it. And he said, there's a meeting Thursday night close to where you live. Why don't you come to that? And I counted up Thursday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Monday, Tuesday. So that's the my ability. I counted up, and I figured I might be able to make Thursday. Because I knew that, you know, the first 3, 4, 5 days were the worst. And I used enough dope and pretended to withdraw enough times. That I knew that I might make it in 4 days. And I promised, which is real interesting because I'm a promiser. I don't know about you guys, but I will promise you anything. I am a wonderful promiser. Wonderful, 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 wonderful. Promise. My best game was, oh, I know I was wrong. I'm sorry. You know, it's just terrible. I promise I'll never do that again. You know, I really take responsibility. I do what I damn please. You know. My son does it to me today. It drives me crazy. How can you come down on him when he admits he's wrong? It's a good stick, man. He comes by it honestly. As a parent, I see it a little differently, but it's a great manipulation. I was a great promiser. I promised myself many, many, many times in that last 2 years that I wasn't going to do this anymore. You know, those times, man. Y'all have it. It's different for each of us, maybe. But remember that time when you recognized and maybe became a little aware and saying, God, this is not the way it's supposed to be. This is not how I had it planned. What am I doing here? This is not the way it was supposed to be. See, because I was a crusader, I thought I found my answer in drugs. The lesson of my childhood was that if you take something, you either are, feel, or act better, and it was a lie. I lived on misinformation most of my life till I got here. That lesson that the doctors taught me and my parents taught me was a lie. Came from misinformed people. When I take something, I'm not better. I don't feel better and I don't act better. I die. I hate myself. I destroy everything I care about. And most of all, I destroy myself. See, but I didn't know that. I look back at my life and, you know, I've done some shitty things. You got to be an asshole to get here. I was talking to Kathleen Friday. And, no, we weren't talking about assholes. And we were talking about getting up. And I just said, oh, you know, the worst thing that can happen is I can come out here and make a complete fool of myself. And by identifying as an NA member, you already know that. That's the prerequisite. When I call here and say, my name is Greg and I'm an addict, you know I'm a fuck up. It's like getting a sponsor. All of us are so worried about finding the right sponsor. If you pick a complete fool, he can't hardly screw up your life any worse than you already have. At least he's not prejudiced. I'm prejudiced about my life. Everything I think filters through this insanity. You know, if it's about you, I'll get 2 + 2 = 4. If it's about me, I'll get 2 + 2 = 6,283. Every time. They told me when I came around that 90% of what goes through my head is bullshit. You know, I figure you get a percent a year. Here's 17 years down the road, 73% of what goes through my head is bullshit. That's good. And I'm worried about picking the right sponsor. Oh, God. Where do we come from? Worry about, you know, the third step, making a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. I mean, how good did you do? If there ain't nothing there and it's just chance, it can't be no worse. Those are some of the things I thought about. And yet I worried about this. I have to find just the right. Since when was I such a perfectionist? You know, all I ever wanted that was perfect was I wanted the dope that would kill me. You know, please sell me an overdose. I wanted the best dope out there, didn't you? I mean, I didn't want the bunk. I wanted the good stuff. I wanted the one that put me under. You know, and then I would get as close as I could. I went to that first meeting. And I got all dressed up. I bathed. That was amazing. I hurt, too. I didn't bathe much my last few years. In the 60s, in the mid-60s, I did a lot of acid. And ever since that, water hurt me. You know, it just kind of felt bad on your skin. I don't know, I guess that's identification, but it hurt. But I bathed for that first meeting, and I spent most of the afternoon getting ready. Slowly. I was sick. I was coming off of a 2.5 year run, my only run, and I'd been using 1/4 to 1/2 ounce. A day, and I was sick. Of course, I didn't have a problem. I wasn't a dope fiend. I wasn't an addict. I'd read about addicts. Didn't you read about addicts? I read about it. I wasn't like them. I was a nice boy. I really was. You know, my grandmother's house caught on fire. I put it out with a garden hose. She patted me on the back. I was a nice boy. I went to the grocery store and found a $100 bill and into candy and turned it in. I was a nice boy. I did that. See? You know where that $100, no one claimed that $100 bill? I got it. 10 years old. All right. I had to use it to replace the stamps I'd ripped off from my cousin. I mean, isn't that what it's like? Now, that's where I come from. Now I look back, and you know what? All I ever wanted was to be okay. I used to make this thing about, I want to feel good. I don't want to feel good. I want to feel okay. Just wanted to be okay. Just wanted to be a real person. Just wanted not to hurt all the time. And you gave it to me. Free. Here. Don't hurt anymore. You told me if I was hurting all the time, I was doing something wrong. And I believed you. And I honestly believe that recovery is not painful. And I like to say this whenever I talk. I hear people talk about how painful recovery is. Bullshit. Lack of recovery is painful. Recovery is relief from the pain. I only hurt from my insanity when my head's up my ass and my program's out the window. When I'm in touch with the God I believed in when I can reach out and be a real person with you. When I care, when I'm oriented towards spiritual principles, I'm not in pain. I'm not in pain when I live this way. It's the times I don't live this way that life kicks my ass. It's the times when I set it all aside in favor of some brilliant idea. You know, those good, aha, I know what's going on. You know, I learned the first thing I have to do when the light bulb goes on in my head is unscrew it. No. I swear, if it's a brilliant idea, forget it. Forget it. Don't even consider it. If it's one of those, ah, you know, no, that's disease. I've had some great ideas like that in my recovery, such that it is. Oh, by the way, the only thing that I've found that's really good about time is the lessons that it takes time to learn. And if you've read the basic text, you had more than I do. I did it 10 years. You know, and that's wonderful. I want you guys to do so good with this program. I want you to become the most spiritual, perfect beings you can. And learn this way of life, because my ass depends on it. Because I come to you when I'm hurting. I'm come to you when I can't remember. You know, I say, people say, well, you don't like the way you talk. And I said, if I can just remember that, should everything be okay? There are times when I can't remember this shit, and I need to come to you, and I want you to know it. So you can tell me. My life depends on it. I'm here today for the same reason that I walked in the door. I can't make it on my own. Left to my own devices, I will destroy myself. Left to my own will, I'll not only destroy myself, but I'll destroy everything around me and everything I love. And I don't want to do that anymore. I lived that way too long. Today I choose not to live that way, and choice is important to me. There's magic in the choice we make. We talk a lot about choice, don't we? And it gives us a choice. We don't believe that, most of us. We assume that everyone will choose recovery. And I've buried a lot of you over the last 17 years. I've buried a lot of friends. And I've buried a lot of loved ones who died of this disease. And it hurt. It hurt so bad I swore I'd never care like that again. In recovery. Fortunately, I can't control that either. I don't have a whole lot of choice. I feel what I feel. The love I feel is 10 times as important than the love I get. The love I feel for you is the payoff. It isn't you coming up here and saying, you know, I love you, Greg. Because I can't feel that. I can a little bit. But I can feel the love I feel for you. I can worship the light I see in your eyes. I can respect the God in you. And know that we're brothers and sisters. That's real for me. And those feelings fill me at times to the point where I leak out all over the place. If you haven't experienced those feelings, Look for the God in each other. Listen to the newcomer. God works through us. Works through every single one of us. You've all said things that are so far behind beyond your comprehension. It has to be God. I know I've said things that, God, damn, did I say that? No. The answer is no, you didn't. You were just a tool. You ever found yourself in a meeting? I know you found yourself in a meeting after you've shared saying, God, I'm so full of shit. But have you ever sat in a meeting and said, God, damn, did I say that? That's God working through you. And look what we do to each other. If I judge you and put you down and separate myself from you by violating your anonymity, who am I separating myself from? I believe I'm separating myself from God. If I push you away, I believe I'm pushing God away. If I'm too busy for you, I believe I'm too busy for God. And it makes us all a part of each other. Now that's great to say. In practice, it ain't so swift. I get there occasionally. I feel we are all one occasionally. And that's good shit. That's better than dope. That's even better than the greatest rush in the world. You know what the greatest rush in the world is? It's a pee when you really gotta go. Better than sex. Better than any of that stuff. But you know what's better than that? Being really with you. Being really with another human being and touching souls and hearts and spirits. If you haven't experienced that yourself, please stop pushing it away. Please stop hiding it from it. You can find it all over this room and in rooms like this all over the country. You can find it in many, many people. Love and respect each other. Stop running away. If you don't want your life to be the way it was, stop living the way you lived. If you want your life to be about recovery, live a life that's about recovery. You know, if you don't want to feel like you're in hell all the time, stop raising it. If you want to feel good and have positive things in your life, do positive things. I honestly believe one of our primary principles is reciprocity. I don't hear it talked about much. The law of retribution, karma, cause and effect. What you sow, you reap. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's all the principle of reciprocity. Be the person you want to be. And if you don't want to be who you think you are, stop acting the way you do. My job as a human being, I believe, is very, very simple. I'm supposed to be the best Greg I can be.
supposed to follow a spiritual path, giving myself along the way. That's it. That's all I got to do.
And yet I worry about this, and I worry about that, and I worry, you know, part of my disease is this addictive personality I have, this thing, that, this part of me that will take anything and make it self-destructive. You know, where I focus, tunnel vision, you know. Most of everyone in this room has been the best at something, even if it's at being the worst. But most of you, most of those have been the best at something. Been the best dancer among your group. Been the best skateboard rider. Had the best baseball card collection. You know, that's our obsessiveness coming out. I mean, we'll get fixed. Addict report card. F, 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 F. An A. The A is in Greek mythology or something weird, you know. Or some close to that, it might have been D, 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 A. You know. Might have been C, 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 D, 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 A. You know, it's close. I'll take things and I'll get involved with them and I will focus them on so hard that everything else goes away. It's like walking through a room with a blindfold on. I kick over a lot of shit and it breaks. You know why I do that? So I found out very, very early that it hurt to look at Greg. I mean, I'm real self-obsessed. It's kind of like that toothache. You know, everybody's had a toothache, and you lay down at night and the tooth goes. And it becomes the whole world, and it's going. And that's all that is. That's the way my head works. I latch on to something, and it goes. And it becomes my world, and everything else goes to shit. I'm real self-obsessed. And I found out, you know, and I also hate myself, right? Low self-esteem, whatever that issue is. You know how I cope with that? How I learned how to cope with that? I found something outside of me that I could do the same thing with. If I focus hard enough on that shit out there, I don't feel this. And then I found the drugs, and they work good. They work real good. Unfortunately, I got stuck in drugs, in a vicious cycle. I got stuck in that cycle of using and having a reaction to the use and craving and using to fix the craving and then having a reaction and then having craving and you then drown. You know, I got stuck there because I have this disease. Other people don't get stuck there. I got stuck there. And that's because I'm an addict. And it kept going round, a long time after I got here. But I got here. I'd really like to spend the rest of the time talking about NA. My greatest joys and my greatest pain focuses around NA. When I first got up here, I said I am Narcotics Anonymous, and I am. And one of the miracles is that spiritual principles aren't vulnerable. NA lives in here. And as long as I believe it, as long as I keep the faith, N.A. is going to be okay. And I know as long as you keep the faith, N.A. is going to be okay and live. Spiritual principles are not vulnerable. I get lost in the turmoil periodically. I get lost in the personalities periodically. I get lost in the shit periodically. But it helps me when I remember that N.A. is safe, because it really lives in us. N.A. is not an external. N.A. is not something I go to. It ain't a place. It ain't a person. It ain't a thing. It's inside. Just like recovery isn't out there. There's no recovery out there. Recovery is in here. And it's in each of you. And we've been looking in the wrong places all our lives. We've been looking for that magic. I look for that magic, that person, place, or thing that make everything okay. Fix me. But it's in here. And I was looking out there. I've honestly come to believe that there is absolutely nothing external about the first step. That powerlessness and unmanageability live in here. They don't live out there. They live in here. And they kick my ass from within. Not from without. Maybe the symptoms are from without. But the price I pay is within. It's kind of like, you know, when something comes down. Let's say I'm driving along the freeway and someone cuts me off. The problem is not that that asshole cut me off. The problem is that I want to kill him for an hour. And I get so caught up in that wanting to kill him for an hour that I miss my off ramp and I'm late to work and, you know, and my life goes to shit. You know. It's not the external thing. It's my reaction to those external things. It's one of the things I disagree with in our basic text. I think we misplaced the emphasis when we said we're powerless over people, places, and things. It's true, we are. But it's my reaction to those people, places, and things that destroys me, that really creates pain for me. It's not them. It's not the drugs. It's not the situation. You know, it's not the lousy place. You know, it's not being having a flat tire. It's me hating me. It's me hating me. It's me destroying me. It's not those outside things that kick my ass. It's me. I am the problem. Now, I love that saying, if I am not the problem, there is no solution. I believe it. You know, those outside things are real. But my attitude depends a lot on how I respond to them. And sometimes my attitudes are really mixed. You know, I had this thing that I heard about when I first came around. This is one of the things that really helped me identify with Narcotics Anonymous. See, because some of you got up in meetings and said some things that I'd never told anybody. And one of the things I heard early on, I heard someone say, I felt both inferior and superior at the same time. And I didn't know you could have contradicting feelings. I didn't know it was okay. My grandmother died. When she scalded to death, part of me was real sad. And part of me was glad that she was gone. I hated myself because I wasn't supposed to feel that way. I remember 5 years. I was going crazy. And, you know, you're not supposed to feel that way with 5 years clean, Greg. Who the hell gave me the right to decide how I was supposed to feel? It's what I do with those feelings that I have some choice about. I can feel not all right and destroy myself because of it. I can feel not all right, and I can reach out to you, and things turn out just fine. You know, this isn't a program about me getting well. It's a program about us. Because I can't do it alone. My recovery depends on you. My life depends on you. Without you, I will destroy myself one more time. A lot of things happened, and I went through a very difficult time in my recovery. There were some events I just described, one of them. Greg, you're not supposed to feel this way, right? Another thing that happened, coincidence. I was moving. I have a reputation for moving a lot. I've lived in 3 towns in 17 years. Okay? And I was packing up the bathroom. And off the top shelf of the medicine cabinet, out fell this electric razor case, split open, and there was a set of works and the whole bit. And it felt just like someone hit me in the stomach with a baseball bat. It terrified me because I had no idea it was there. I'd put it there. But in the zest of recovery, you know, in that, all right, that we get when we first come around, you know, I forgot. And I hadn't been reminded of it down the road. When, you know, we go through a lot of stuff. And I talk about some of the thresholds of recovery sometimes. And I go through the 6 months. And I don't want to do that today. But at 5 years, I found myself utterly destroyed because the program quit working. It didn't work anymore to read the steps. It didn't work anymore to smile when I felt like shit. Didn't work anymore to talk good stuff in meetings. You know, go in there and impress people. And I found myself saying this God shit that everybody's talking about. It better be for real or I'm fucked. Because I could no longer continue to control my recovery. Because I found out that that control was just as dangerous as trying to control my using. I found out that my life had become unmanageable. And it was devastating. But it was the beginning of dependence on a power greater than myself. I'd toyed with the idea before, and I'd done some really neat things. You know, at 2 months clean to the day, I was sitting there crying in someone's arms saying, I don't believe in anything. And it was destroying me. And I did have a program, and I did have faith, and I did have hope. And I did have a higher power before then. But it was a theoretical higher power. And I don't know if I can tell you what's happened since then, but I know that ever since then, there's been a small part in me that shined, that I was aware of. It was a safe place. It was a warm place. It was a place that I could go to and touch God. I believe that every recovery is based on divine intervention. I don't believe that any of us get clean because of circumstance or because of our will. I believe that every recovery is based on divine intervention. And you're all here, and I'm here because some power greater than ourselves had the grace to let us live. And if you're wallowing in self-pity, how dare you fuck up God's time? I can remember getting real pissed off at me. And when I wallow in self-pity, some jerk tells me, how dare you, you know. And I say, thank you, you know. But I need to be reminded of that. When I get caught in my self-obsession, I need to be reminded that it ain't my life anyway. It ain't my life. I gave up the right to decide how my life was supposed to be. I gave up the right to write the script and plan reality. Isn't that the greatest insanity of all? I can manipulate and control reality. To me, that's restoration to sanity, the second step, has a lot to do with the realization that I can't manipulate and control reality. That I ain't God. It took me a lot of pain to learn that lesson. And it took me a lot of joy to learn that lesson too. You know, recovery has not been that tough for me. I found out that staying clean ain't no big deal. It is at first. I mean, the hardest thing we ever have to do is 30 days. Or one day. The toughest year is the first year. I don't care what I hear. I hear a lot of people say, my hardest year was... No, my hardest year was the first year. It was touch and go most of the time. And I'd walk into rooms and say, I don't belong here. And I had to get over that and say, I belong here, and that's my chair, and I will fight you for it. I had to get over being different. I had to get over being separate. And I've had to get over it many times. Every time I come to a convention, I have to get over being separate. I don't know about you, but it takes me a while to adjust to being with this many people. I go through that every time. My life is a daily surrender. Or 10, or 20, or 30, or 40, or 50, or 60. And sometimes none, because I'm in control, and watch out, because it's coming. The God I believe in hits me upside the head real good. Saying, you ain't controlled, chump! Uh-huh, okay. But I don't learn real good. I keep trying. And he keeps hitting me upside the head. I spent New Year's hour with some friends in meditation. And about, you know, I have weird things about being the Sunday morning spiritual speaker. Because I don't consider myself all that spiritual. I know about that much more than the bare minimum for me to stay clean, for God to keep me clean. My spirituality is shaky most of the time. Some mornings the most spiritual thing I do is shit. There are other times, though, where I feel real in touch with the God I believe is running my life. I felt that last night. A group of us, a few of us got together in a room and shared. You know, and I found over a lot of conventions. My first convention was the first World Convention in 1971. And I've been to a number since. And I get it in the halls. And I get it in the rooms. And I ain't here to fuck around. And I'm not here to get see what I can get from you. I take this shit real seriously. I really do. You know. I also give you a right to be here for what you're here for. Whatever that is. Because you'll get what you're here for. One way or another, yeah. You will. If you're hanging around this program to have friends, you'll have friends. They won't last long. If you're hanging around this program to get laid, you'll get laid. Then what? If you're hanging around this program to get attention, you don't have all the attention you can stand. Then what? I don't believe you have to work the steps to stay clean. I honestly don't believe you have to work the steps to stay clean. But who'd want to be that miserable? There's only one thing worse than a clean addict without a program. And that's a dirty addict without a program. I know, I tried both. My early years were substitution. That didn't work. I tried, you know, food, sex, reading, collections, cars, jobs, prestige, money, property. I tried it. Don't work. You don't have to try it. I know you will. And I love you because you will, because you're just like me. And the times I slip off into those things, you can remind me. Don't work, Greg. Okay. You know, this program's gotten real simple. Boy, it hurt like hell getting simple. I'll tell you that. I earned it. The times when it's simple. People will sometimes ask me, how did you make that so simple? I struggled for 10 years. How did you create it? Like everybody else. How'd you learn that, Greg? Shit, if you only knew. It'd be so much easier if we accepted things on face value. As far as relationships go, you don't know how to have them. Now, you'll try, but it'll hurt like hell. My suggestion is to learn how to have them before you go for it. Get a sponsor. Work the steps. Get a God. Learn how to be honest. Do that first. I know most of you won't, but you're entitled to your misery. That's how I learned. Misery has been a great teacher, folks. It's had to teach me that I ain't nothing special. It's had to teach me that I'm not in charge. It's had to teach me that there's a God I can trust. And it's scary. This program goes against everything I was taught.
that goes against the idea. If you want something, you've got to go out and get it and fight for it. You've got to do it. Take control. Take charge of your life. Didn't work. Had to give up. Surrender is the hardest thing in the world for us. Surrender is the hardest thing in the world for us. I said that twice because you might not have heard it the first time. God, I didn't hear it for years. To me, this program is all about surrender. And it's all about love. And it's all about God. We are the most wonderful people in the world. And we can't believe it. We can't accept it because of our self-hate. We are the most wonderful people in the world because we're together. Addicts. And I look out there and I see some little lights. And I love your light. There weren't a whole lot of lights when I came around and some of those went out. And now there are a bunch of lights. And there are going to be a bunch more lights if you care enough, if I care enough. If I care enough to be honest, if I care enough to be open, if I care enough to risk your rejection or your acceptance, if I care enough to risk your love, if I can just find enough courage to just be Greg and let you be you. If I can find enough courage to meet you as an equal in anonymity and really be with you. If we can do that, there's going to be a whole lot more lights light up. And a few less go out. You are my higher power, and I love you.